The Man in Line with Andy Wint.
My good afternoon. Welcome to Man in Line on Manx Radio. Your chance to have your say. And it's an open line today by calling 66 13 68. Text or WhatsApp 166 177. Email studio at manxradio.com. Let the Isle of Man know exactly what you think today. On from yesterday, when Geoffrey Robinson of the Department of Infrastructure was talking about electric buses and how we'd need somewhere bigger than the Lake Road Depot if we had electric buses, John dropped a note in just to say, what about the damage to the roads? Well, electric buses are generally heavier than diesel buses because of the large battery packs. So it's the batteries that are heavy. The difference varies by model. A typical single-deck electric bus weighs between 11 and 13 tons unladen, while a double-decker electric bus is about 18 tons or more, again, before the passengers are added. That's broadly comparable to many modern diesel double-deckers already used on public roads. Now, road engineers usually assess road wear by axle weight rather than the total vehicle weight. And because buses spread their weight over multiple axles, the damage increase is not always as dramatic as you may assume. Heavy goods vehicles generally cause far more road wear than buses. So that's the answer to that, John. Thank you for getting in touch with that. Isn't it strange, says a texter, who wants to remain anonymous. Isn't it strange how buses suddenly come onto the scene again whenever the discussion of extending the horse tram comes up? If I recall correctly, at the meetings regarding the Douglas Promenade resurfacing, the horse trams were only supposed to go as far as Broadway, not the sea terminal, because 10 new buses were to take priority. Is that true? And Dick dropped a note in to say, how can Manx Care say the hospital is too small when the new Nobles open with 314 acute care beds? Their plan is now to run it with 160 beds. This is Dick's opinion. Half what it was. Even when Manx Care took over 5 years ago, there were 270 acute beds. So how can they say Nobles is too small when there used to be double the number of beds? The trouble is, there are now around 1,000 more people employed there than there were before. Well, tell me where you get your figures from, Dick, but we'll take that as your opinion. We have a perfectly usable depot and bus fleet. The DOI needs to concentrate on fixing the Isle of Man's crumbling roads and infrastructure before thinking about any grand electric fleet schemes. And we're also yesterday talking about recreational cannabis and how and if and when and should it be made legal on the Isle of Man. And nobody's yet come up with a theory as to how you keep the criminals out of it. I mean, obviously they wouldn't be producing it, but the moment legitimately produced, commercially available marijuana cigarettes were available, how would you stop the criminals just undercutting or just selling knockoff versions? What would you do? If any of the criminal fraternity are listening and want to tell me how that would happen. Anyway, do get in touch. Howard's with us now. Hi, Howard.
Hello, Andy. I'm just wondering, we had some family members over for the last week, fortnight, and a couple of them went back on Tuesday night on the steam packet with the car and all the bits that went with it, and they booked a cabin. This is the one going out at 7, 8 o'clock at night.
Yeah.
They booked a cabin, and of course, they want to put their head down because they have a bit of a snooze before driving down the motorway. Anyway, they went up to the cabin, no blankets. There used to always be blankets there. I've travelled dozens of times on it, and there's always been a blanket there in the cabin. But this time, there's none. So the son-in-law he went out and he spotted one of the girls that was working on the vessel and said, any blank? Yes, there is, but they're £15 for a pair. Is this a Ryanair job where everyone's extra?
Is this, was that a deposit for returnable, or do you have to buy them?
I don't know. I don't know, but he was not very well pleased. He didn't get them, obviously. They put their coats over themselves for £15. Now, how this is working out, I don't know. It'd be interesting to know from your listeners whether they'd come across a similar situation. But, as I say, for many years we were going away, we always had a cabin. My wife likes, you know, just to get her head done. And there was always a blanket there. I know for a fact that the steam packer were having problems with people taking the blankets.
Yeah.
Particularly when they were the Laxey Woolen Mill ones. And they were very nice, actually. But they were losing a number of them. But for charging, so it'd be interesting to know if this is a normal way of charging. The blankets are there on the return trip when you come back at 2:15 in the morning.
Oh, I see. So but the overnight ones, you do get them.
Yeah, but I would have thought that this is always referred to as the night sailing when it leaves 7 or 8 o'clock. And it gets in about 11, 12 o'clock,
yeah,
depending on the state of the tides. But for no creature comforts, it's like going to a hotel and find there's no blankets on the bed.
Well, that seems weird. And if anybody's got any more information on this, so it's the early evening departure from Douglas. Mm. I'd also be interested to know on the 2 o'clock sailing, that kind of 2:30 sailing from Heysham to the Isle of Man, if there are blankets in the cabins there, or if they are. And again, if this £15 is a deposit, or do you have to buy the darn things? Because if you're travelling often, you'll end up with a hamper full of blankets.
Yeah, yeah, because they'd already paid what he said was a £75 for the cabin, and said, and he was very much surprised that when he got up there, there was no, the other things, all the televisions, all everything else, yeah, was there. Oh, and there was one hand towel. So if there was four people in the cabin, unless you go down and request and get some more, a small hand towel for people to have a shower.
Well, that's no use at all, is it?
None whatsoever. So whether you go down to the reception or whatever it is, and you can get extra showers, extra towels, yeah, because a hand towel is no good if you're going to have a shower.
And it has to be said, as you say, I mean, certainly I think those overnight cabins are about £90 or something.
Yep, they are.
So you would have thought, I mean, blankets don't cost that much, particularly, you know, the kind of bottom range, the economy blankets don't cost a fortune. Mm. So surely they could afford to lose a few for the amount, yep, that they're charging.
Well, I know I looked on the internet and it said even with pet cabins, bring your own blankets for the pets, which is obvious.
Yeah.
But we always, there was always a blanket on or two in the cabin ready for use when you went up. And I've come back many a time on the sailings or gone away on the sailings at night, and there's always been a blanket. So just be interested to know if this is standard practice on the steam packer.
Right.
And why did, if it is, why did they change to that situation?
Okay. All right, Howard, thanks for calling today.
Okay, take care.
All right,
bye now.
14 minutes past 12. Have you taken a cabin on the Manxman lately? Have you been charged for? And again, I'd be interested to know if you have to buy the darn things. If they're, because it may be worth, if it's non-returnable, if £15 is non-returnable, that you nip into Asda on the way in Lancaster and pick up some economy blankets. There could be a market, couldn't there, in blankets over this. Andrew's with us now. Hi, Andrew.
Hi, Andy. Good day to you. Please, Andy, I'm following up on the story online, the halfway horse tram issue.
Yeah.
And how the business case reported this morning by your reporters, the business case has missed the deadline again for inclusion on the order paper. And it now could be at the discretion of the president if they want to put in a supplementary to be included, or, but that would have to be voted on whether they take that. And It all comes as the perception, I think, that this is a managed, inverted commas, situation that somebody doesn't want it to actually come to Tynwald in this administration, this business case. And if I'm correct, there was a business case. It was put by the DOI to Treasury, and I think your words are, could do better, because it was rejected. Is that correct?
I think didn't Alex talk a lot about this last Friday about the horse trams?
Correct. And the business case had been done, put to Treasury, and they rejected it and effectively said, resubmit it. So, in the matter of the public interest, what was that business case that was put by DOI to Treasury and was rejected? What actually did it request and what did it say?
As in how much? Why? How much did they want?
Well, that as well. So where is that business case that Joe Public can see it, that so that we know what it is that the DOI are asking for, and we also then know what Treasury are not agreeing to? This should be a matter of public interest, and this document made public. Is it not feasible, please, Andy, that your good selves can put an FOI in and get that document and publish it?
Okay, right. Well, that's been heard, and we'll certainly get onto that just to see what's what. But overall, I mean, if you were looking at this from the outside, and you'll see, I mean, when this was first in 2022, I think it was, it reopened, didn't it? The shortened track opened then.
Yeah.
And it was £750,000 when it was first discussed years ago. Now it's just under £2 million.
Well, it all comes back, obviously my opinion, this comes back to whoever the chief executive was of the department at the time, not wanting the minister not wanting to have to come and stand before Tynwald and ask for £750,000 and explain at the time, well, actually, I know you guys voted for it, and this is the will of Tynwald, but, you know, actually, this is who it was who de-scoped it to pay for something else. So can we have a bit more, please?
Okay.
So right. That's what it comes to.
Right. Well, I mean, it just goes on and on and on. And it's funny enough, I was walking the grass strip at the moment, what would be the tramway through to the sea terminal yesterday. And just wondering, really, if it is ever, ever going to happen. And if it does happen, how much it's going to cost.
And when you walked along, please, Andy, had it been mown? Had it been looked after, that grass strip? Or has it just looked like an eyesore?
No, it has been. Obviously been quite recently mown, but it is. I mean, it's still full of weeds. It's not what you call pristine grass. It's just something. Because you remember, for a while, they were letting it wild, weren't they?
So it's not even with wildflowers.
No, there are no flowers on it. Just grass there. We'll see. All right, Andrew, thanks for calling today. We appreciate that. The Douglas Bay Horse Tramway originally ran the full length of the promenade, Derby Castle to the sea terminal. It was proudly used for years and years and years, and at the height of the visiting trade, the double-decker trams would go, and they will be absolutely chock-a-block during the season. It's widely recognised as the world's last surviving original horse-drawn tramway still operating in its historic setting. So let's put that into context for the history buffs amongst us and our culture. That's what it is. Nobody else can contradict that. The world's last surviving original horse-drawn tramway still operating in its historic setting. In 2016, Douglas Council stopped operating the service, saying it was no longer financially viable. The Department of Infrastructure in 2016 took over the tramway to preserve the heritage railway. The tramway reopened in 2022, but only the shortened Derby Castle to Broadway route, the halfway horse tram. In February of this year, Infrastructure Minister Tim Crookall, MHK, said the business case for reinstating the missing section was under review and that if approved by Tynwald, work would begin within 12 months and would take 40 weeks. So you got that. In February, so February 2026, it could start within 12 months before February 2027 and would take about 40 weeks. Now, last week on Man in Line with Alex, Chief Engineer Andy Cowie confirmed the updated estimated cost is just under £2 million compared with £750,000 when first discussed years ago. Mr. Cowie blamed inflation, high construction costs and the need to relay services already completed on the promenade. Mr. Cowie also said Treasury hadn't rejected the proposal outright. He said Treasury requested revisions and additional detail before it would recommend the business case to Tynwald. Infrastructure Minister Tim Crookall separately described the proposal as a work in progress. Well, the business case missed the deadline, as you heard Andrew say. It missed the deadline for inclusion on May's main Tynwald order paper, and unless the president of Tynwald agrees to a supplementary order paper, the debate will now likely be delayed beyond this month. Douglas Council, back on the scene, is now publicly pressuring government to complete the full route, arguing that it's important for tourism, heritage and cruise visitor traffic. The council leader, Devon Watson, has linked the tram issue to wider complaints about unfinished and deteriorating sections of Douglas Promenade, including sea defences and public realm works. That's where we are. And if you have anything to say on the horse trams, then by all means do get in touch. Juan's with us now. Hello, Juan.
How are you, Andy? I think we're all going to be back on horse and traps by the next 10 years, aren't we?
Well, it'd be very, very ecologically friendly. We'll all have a horse.
Oh, we'll all be living the green life, won't we? We'll be horse and traps down to Ramsey and promenading along that nice promenade that they promised us. And just a couple of things there. On yesterday's programme, we're talking about this proposed new bus depot. And, I mean, the phenomenal cost that this will be. I'm looking at, just had a quick check on the safety issues of parking up electric buses. And, I mean, they're saying now, to stop from thermal runaway, 8-metre gaps between buses. So, you know, we've had this issue before, talked about the steam packet and taking stuff away, you know, damaged electric cars, etc. So there's going to need a big depot with an awful lot of power that's going to have to be produced to charge these up. Like I mentioned yesterday, that they had to charge the last one up at the power station. But if I remember rightly, the double-decker that they had wasn't working out efficiently for them because they didn't take into consideration the amount of battery usage that you're going to get going up hills, climbing hills, and also heaters, because we've got a lot more bad weather than what we've got good weather. So all that's going to take its toll on the battery on the bus. So that wasn't into the original figures that the companies give out when they give these figures out of mileage that these buses do. So that's all going to be taken off it. The question has to be asked, like the wind turbines, do we need these? Is this virtue signalling and going down the green agenda route, which, you know, we're being pushed into?
Well, the offshore wind turbines is plain and simple. It's a revenue generator. Nobody can argue that it's not going to affect the horizon. It is going to affect the horizon enormously. But I think it's the trade-off between the fact that we are promised untold millions, possibly billions, by having these wind turbines off the East Coast. So, I mean, there is an additional benefit, as they say, because it's eco-electricity, it's renewable electricity. But the fact is, the East Coast wind farm is a revenue generator, Juan.
But a revenue generator for who, Andy? This is the big question.
Well, hopefully for us.
Well, hopefully. I mean, I don't like that word, hopefully, though. I'd like to have a word called positively. And this is the problem, isn't it, that this sort of stuff has been hidden from us. Perhaps maybe Phil Gorn can interview himself one day on the Prospective programme, because he was in the original negotiations with Dong Energy, I think. So, you know, there's people there that you see that were there, that signed the papers. There's some photographs going around of these the board that was there at the time. Perhaps they should come out and tell us a little bit more of the truth of the costings of this and what we're actually going to get back. And again, we're back to money, as you said, Andy. I mean, the Ørsted are purely in this for money. They're not in it for anything else. But, you know, it's just... I looked at... I mean, David comes on every day and talks about his batteries overnight, bless him. But let's look at the cost of these batteries. We've got a 10 to 15 year life expectancy, and a battery is going to cost you between £3,000 and £5,000 plus the installation. So that's a lot of electricity that you'd have to use to justify that with a 10-year write-down. So, I mean, is this stuff, does it stand on its own 2 feet? Has it got legs to stand on? Or is this just massive green agenda that we're going through?
Well, it's plain, though, also, Juan, that battery technology is coming on leaps and bounds. I mean, certainly over the past 20 years, battery technology has changed enormous, and the retention that they can make now with batteries. I mean, obviously, again, there's the question of the raw materials that you need for batteries, but setting that aside, battery technology is only ever going to improve simply by pressure of time, because the industry is pushed into a corner to make it better, so it'll make it better.
But we still have this outlying question of baseloads. And I mean, we look at the amount of looking at internationally at the amount of energy that's being used now by massive server farms, and the way that everything is heading by AI, is going to be a massive use of electricity. So again, back to your 29.5 pence per unit, where are we going to stand with this? And we're high. I mean, I just come from South Africa. They're on, I think, it's an average of about 13 pence per kilowatt unit, about the same as Florida, to be honest.
Well, when it works in South Africa, remember.
Well, but here's another point, you see. One of the most corruptest areas for energy. I mean, it's corrupted. But, I mean, they're still paying half of what we are. And they're getting energy and electric siphoned off like nobody's business there. But they're still paying half of what we are, Andy. So this is the problem. You know, how much is it going to cost us?
OK. All right, Juan, good to hear from you. Thanks for being
Andy.
With us. All right, 27 minutes past 12.
Walton's Farm Electricals. Great service. Great price and stock to go.
For everything electrical for your home, it has to be Walton's. At Walton's Electrical, we have a huge stock of ready-to-go items at incredible prices. Open Monday to Saturday, 9 till 5, on the Isle of Man Business Park, Braddon. Find us online at waltons.im and follow us on Facebook for our latest offers.
Walton's Farm Electricals. Great service, great price and stock to go.
If you have children, pets, or a house, talk to Peace of Mind about a will or power of attorney, which will help family members when it matters. Prices from $199 plus VAT. Find us on Facebook or call 632 610.
One Architectural Design Company has particular expertise in achieving planning approval for a wide variety of projects, from landmark buildings to spectacular homes. Talk to the experts at Ellis Brown and get your project off the ground. For excellence in design, search Ellis Brown.
This is your official invitation to take a stroll around Ramsey Garden Centre and take in the extensive ranges available for your home, no matter the size. Grow smarter, greener, season after season with Ramsey Garden Centre.
A great night's sleep got even better with Zed's Bedding Store. From quality Beldorm bed linen and mattress protectors, fleece and woven throws, to luxury duvets from the fine bedding company, Zed's Bedding Ramsey, next to Isle of Man Bank.
Hello, I'm BethEsby.com, Manx Radio's head of biker podcasts. In this general election year, Manx Radio will have an almost interminable number of programmes in the run-up to the big day when you can choose who to bin off. And for the first time, we're also hosting a live show aimed at helping all those tens of young and first-time voters, or those who've just forgotten, through the complex issue of voting. That is, confirming your name and address, stepping into a cubicle, and putting an X next to the name of someone you think isn't going to be completely useless. So join us at IM1 Voting for Dummies, live at the Peel Centenary Centre from 7:30 p.m. on the 16th of May. Tickets available online at centenarycentre.com, from Celtic Gold in Peel or OMA in Ramsey. Voting for Dummies, laughing in the face of democracy.
The Man in Line with Andy Wint.
12:30, May dropped a note in on 123. My daughter and two children travelled to Heysham, evening sailing in January. They were frozen. No blankets. I went a fortnight ago, 8 o'clock sailing, no blankets. But as we arrived in Heysham, staff were putting sheets and blankets for the return sailing. Are people nicking blankets? Is that what it is? Surely there's a better way of doing this. Once upon, do you remember those embossed blankets, the ones with the steam packet? They were non-woven fabric, but they were embossed with the steam packet logo on it. Is that what it was? Are people stealing blankets, or is it a matter of time and motion to do that? Any thoughts? Bus Vanin currently run a fleet of 50 buses to replace them with an electric fleet of average battery storage 300 kilowatts. That's 15,000 kilowatts, currently 40% of our daily usage. Where's that coming from? Well, from the electricity supply. I mean, but they wouldn't be training that 24 hours a day. That would be a one-off. Anyway, it's a thought for the future. And Bonzo's on now. Hi, Bonzo.
Hello. Yes. Coming back to the horse trams and the business case.
Yeah.
Now, which business case are we talking about? Perhaps you might be able to clarify this for me. Is that the one that Michelle Hayward submitted and then was booted back by Treasury, which has had then Jim Cahill and everybody else working on a new one, which is the work in progress that still hasn't progressed enough to be put before Jim?
Well, it was in February of this year, so presumably it was the Michelle Hayward one.
Yeah, because she'd been speaking about that, you know, quite a time before, saying, yes, this is something we want to crack on with, but we're having to sort out the business case with how to submit that to Treasury. I think she also wanted some inclusion in the business case about the you know, the horse tram stables and you know, all that area around Terminus Town and things. Okay, so presuming, therefore, the one that was rejected was Michelle Hayward's proposal, which Treasury rejected it? Was it Alex Allenson's Treasury, or was it Chris Thomas's Treasury?
We don't know.
Yeah, well, I think that's something to look at.
I mean, Bonzo, you've been around public affairs for a long time. Why do you think there's this hesitancy not to get on with the job? Why do you think there's obviously somebody, whether an elected official or whether it's a bureaucrat in the civil service, somebody is putting their foot on the neck of this project on purpose?
Well, it could be budgetary. It could be just simple. No, actually, if we can punt it down the road and it goes into the next administration, then the next administration will spend all day trying to think about it, and hopefully everyone will forget about it, and there'll be other problems, and you know, it will just go to the bottom of the in tray, and everyone.
Bearing in mind, this is the same department that has wildly overspent on the Liverpool landing stage. Do the people involved not think that the public can put two and two together? Do they really think that the public won't notice that this is the same department that can't get enough air traffic controllers? That can't, you know, the Liverpool landing stage was shall we say, less than perfectly negotiated, and that also that the promenade in some places is falling to pieces.
Well, that'll be a very interesting question that electors might address as their candidates for September, I would have thought. But if Michelle Hayward is by any chance listening, perhaps she might be able to give us some more information on that business case that was received, and perhaps why it was then torn up in order to allow it to then be redrafted and delayed.
Okay. All right. Thanks, Bonzo. Good to hear from you. All right, 26 minutes before. Note in from Dennis, who says, regarding the horse trams, bearing in mind that we had three private members' bills that were soaking up all the political time in the last administration, or this administration, i.e. the 20 miles per hour one island-wide, and removing the vote from the bishop and the assisted dying, then surely the politicians read the room and know that the public actually understand what's gone on, in that something that has got widespread public approval, i.e. the horse trams, well, I mean, that's contestable. We don't know. It may be that the vast majority, the silent majority, couldn't care less about the horse trams. We don't really know. But it may be something that you want to say to your candidates. Well, we'll see. I don't know what your thoughts are regarding this and where you think the horse trams sit in a list of priorities, bearing in mind that we need economic growth, that we need housing strategies that's going to allow people who are currently paying £1,000, £1,500 a month for private accommodation and can't get savings together to get onto the housing ladder. So we're trapping a generation in private rental. Now, is that more of a priority than the horse trams? When are we going to get the new play area in Douglas? It's 4.5 years since we've had one. Thank you, says Mary. And by the way, blankets, says James, are only provided free of charge on overnight sailings. All other times, you're required to purchase a blanket, £15 per blanket. £15 per blanket. So take your own, says James. Crikey. I wonder whose idea that was. And if you don't know what the routine is, can you imagine paying £70, £80, £90 for a cabin, turning up, no blanket, unless you want to shell out £15 per blanket? Are they good quality blankets? I mean, if they are good quality blankets, fair enough. But who uses blankets nowadays? Doesn't everybody use a duvet? Originally, 150 years ago, the first horse trams only went to the bottom of Broadway, so ironically, it's back to its original journey. But yes, it should be reinstated to the full length of the promenade when it travelled to the sea terminal. The DOI was supposed to have fixed the roads for the TT from Sulby Bridge through to Ramsey, yet just after Sulby Bridge, there's a pothole left on the racing line, and near the central in Ramsey, the surface is already breaking up again. This is Gary in Ramsey. The road into Ramsey from the Ginger is still, in my opinion, not fit for racing on. So who's in charge of this at the DOI? Anne-Marie says, Andy, when is Douglas Council going to complete the promenade walkway from end to end? We were told on the news that the money has been set aside, so why are we waiting? And Carol dropped a note in. Here we have the DOI minister discussing electric buses while the situation with the horse tram continues. It's not even on the May order paper. Mr. Crookall should hang his head in shame. That's Carol's opinion. And Steve says all of these alleged issues with electric buses, yet the person actually in charge of the bus services confirms the whole industry is moving towards electric buses. I suspect he knows more than the usual man in line callers, says Steve. You'll be amazed. We have some remarkably informed man-in-line callers. Michelle Haywood says she's having to apologise to her constituents after 20-mile-per-hour zones in the south haven't materialised. New signage has now been introduced in areas around some of the schools in Douglas in what the Department of Infrastructure is calling a refined approach. It follows a pause in the island-wide scheme earlier this year after a backlash which saw Michelle Haywood sacked and replaced by Tim Crookall, who immediately stopped the rollout. I wonder, what do you think about this? Let's hear from Michelle Haywood.
20 miles an hour signs have been going up around central Douglas, around the schools, and the minister published those plans nearly 7 or 8 weeks ago now for a consultation for 2 weeks, a statutory consultation period, and that's what he's carrying on with. It would be interesting for the department, I think, to publish the results of the consultation that they've done around the rest of the islands, towns and villages, about the 20 mile an hour plans that were originally put forward. I believe, however, this minister is not going to progress on delivering any of that, and that's a real shame, because I know my constituents, particularly down in Port Erin, are absolutely asking for 20 mile an hour protection, especially around Russian primary school.
In retrospect, would it be better for you to have gone this direction and then expanded it later?
I think there was always a problem that the department published all the map in one go and it looked massive, and actually that's what the implementation plan that we then put forward to that Tim would approved actually set us on a staged approach to this, taking various different parts of the island. That consultation and that research, though, has been done and is there. It just needs a minister that's brave enough to get on with it. Port St Mary already have the 20 mile an hour zone, and they were promised there would be a review of this after a year. That hasn't happened. The department haven't delivered on that. Port Erin, they're asking for 20 mile an hour signs to be put up. They were asked to wait for those 20 mile an hour signs until the consultation had been done. Consultation has been done. The results have not been published, and the minister appears not to want to take it forward at all. So I'll be apologising to my constituents that I was pushing on with what they wanted, and this government has decided to stop.
Russian MHK Michelle Haywood. The DOI says it's tweaked the proposals to prioritise locations that will benefit pupils, parents and school staff. The new approach should, it says, strike a balance between maintaining safe travel around schools and allowing a strategic through route to continue to operate efficiently. 20 mile per hour signs are being introduced near St Ninian's High School in Douglas, St Mary's Primary School, Ballacameen High School, Henry Bloom Noble Primary School and St Thomas's Scotland Jubilee. Plans for the new 20 mile per hour zones came about after Anne Corlett gained support in Tynwald during the previous administration for the new limits to be introduced in residential areas. It was that long ago. 20 is plenty, it was called. Mrs. Corlett told Manx Radio she only wanted the new restrictions around schools in her constituency and was never intended for a blanket 20 mile per hour limit, but the idea basically got hijacked. The DOI says the area targeted in the new approach encompasses the neighbourhood in which Douglas Central MHK and Corlett's campaign for lower speed limits began. Under which administration did the horse tram business case happen? Well, the horse tram business case came under the DOI when Michelle Haywood was Infrastructure Minister, although it would have been prepared by departmental officers rather than personally by her. Well, Treasury, they say, didn't publicly reject the plan outright. Instead, it asked DOI to revise and resubmit parts of the business case before it could go to Tynwald. At the time of the Treasury review, the Treasury Minister was Chris Thomas MHK, not Dr. Allinson, who left the role following the Council of Ministers reshuffle earlier in the year. So the business case originated from Michelle Haywood's Department of Infrastructure, but the Treasury scrutiny and request for revisions happened under the current Treasury Minister Chris Thomas, not Dr. Allinson. Is that clear? A note in says, Andy, Manx Utilities are spending 3 weeks surveying the NSC for solar panels. My suggestion is they use the original architecture plans from Foreman Roberts, who designed the building, along with the power station plans to link it up. So why will it take 3 weeks to survey the NSC for solar panels? Is this more money being wasted? My new slogan is, save our taxes. Also, they rent very expensive large yards in Middle River. Again, why, says this correspondent. Oh, I mentioned yesterday that I was on the prom, parking on the prom by that grass verge, which is going to be where the horse trams, if they ever do go, go. Funny enough, there was somebody there with a theodolite. There were two people, end to end, with those... it's not a theodolite, but the modern equivalent of what a theodolite is. I wonder what they were doing.
Ramsey Care Products is now opened in St Paul's Square, Ramsey. An Aladdin's cave of stock, including mobility scooters, Rise recliners, household aids and more. Call 627 177 to find out more. Ramsey Care Products, affordable mobility solutions for you.
For a wide range of wood-burning stoves and a complete installation service, visit The Snug in Ramsey. And we don't stop there.
kiln-dried firewood and full aftercare service, including chimney sweeps and maintenance. Call The Snug in Ramsey.
At Bond Fabrics, we're not just a fabric shop. As well as curtains and upholstery and dress and costume fabrics, we've knitting and crocheting wools, made-to-measure curtain and blind service, plus poles and tracks. Visit Strand Street, Douglas, call 611856 or see bondfabrics.im.
Herschel.co.im.
The exclusive Kärcher store is open, with thousands of products, accessories and parts in stock. For Kärcher sales and service, Hersham Electrical, Shipyard Industrial Estate, Ramsey.
Isle of Man Census 2026 is underway. Please complete and return your household form. You can complete it online at the Census 26 website using a phone, tablet or computer. If you'd rather not complete it online, you can also do it on paper, by phone or face-to-face with a census officer. For details, call 685 700 between 8 a.m. and 4 p.m. Monday to Friday or email census@gov.im. You can also visit the Census Office at Customs House Douglas for advice and to drop off forms. More information is available at gov.im/census26.
Later today on Manx Radio.
The ball's gone out of play, leaving the ground, hits a tree and comes back in, and the refs play on, you know. I think this is Manx football, this is hard stuff. Our midfielder upends someone in the first minute of a game. He somersaults onto his back, this bloke, and the refs play on. And I thought, this is different.
That's Rick Holden. Football, the Isle of Man and me. Later today, at 6:30, with a longer in-depth programme available to download shortly after broadcast on manxradio.com.
The Man in Line with Andy Wint.
And Brian's with us now. Hi, Brian.
Hi, Andy. Not often I come on nowadays, you know, it's the David Quirk programme, so I'll leave it to him. I'd just like to take this opportunity to ask any MHK politician or government official who had a hand in the change of the rodenticide policy to come forward and be counted, just in case. Because many years ago I bought a farm, and they decided that farm owners, landowners, should do their own rodent, or have their own rodent policy, and they would supply the rodenticide. To that end, they sent me on a course, very nice. I was out there for a week at Knockalo and learnt an awful lot about how dangerous these creatures can be. About 2 years ago, they said, no, we're not supplying rodenticide anymore. You have to get it yourself. Now, my experience is there is an awful lot of farmers who don't bother. There are a terrific amount of landowners, leisure landowners, that have no idea it's their responsibility. Now, hantavirus is one of the diseases, like Wheels disease, that these rodents can give a person and they die. We've seen that just recently in the Atlantic on that ship. So, in case anything should happen on the Isle of Man, could the decision makers step forward and hold their hands up and said, we're not going to provide it anymore, but we will take responsibility if there's an issue.
Was there a reason for not supplying it?
Oh, I really don't know. I got messed about. You could only get two bags in one go, and then they changed it. You had to come on a Monday morning or a Wednesday afternoon, and then you had to get it from the forestry board in Peel. And then it went to one day a week, and then they said, we're stopping doing it, end of story.
Did you have to pay for it?
No. And you tell me, especially in these tough times, a farmer who will be responsible enough to go and buy this stuff and then spend a day going around setting bait traps.
Right.
There's very few of us going to bother.
How much does it cost, Brian?
Well, 100 weight, well, not 100 weight, it's 25 kilo bags now. About 50 quid.
Right, OK. So when you say you're aware that there are some people in the agricultural industry who aren't discharging their responsibility, how widespread do you think it is?
Well, let me put it to you a different way. I don't know of anybody else other than me that's actually doing it. So, and given that even up to yesterday, one of my liveries has come to me and said, oh, my mother's got rodents around her house. Could you get us a bait box, please, and some rodenticide? And that's happening more and more often now. And I think you're going to see them more and more, and they'll encroach, and then we'll have a problem.
Well, Wheels disease is, I mean, it's funny, I was only talking about this in the context of that cruise liner today in the office. My pal Steve nearly died of Wheels disease.
Oh, yeah. I know a couple in the agricultural fraternity that have been severely compromised by it. But, you know, one of the Kirkpatricks very nearly died. And in my own case, one of my liveries accidentally dropped the key to her feed bin, reached down to pick it up, and it was slightly underneath the front edge. Picked the key up, and when she pulled her hand out, there was a rodent hanging off one of her fingers.
Oh, my word.
Yeah, and if they bite you, their two front teeth have two layers of dentine, and they're like a snap-off knife. They break their own teeth deliberately, and they're constantly growing, and when they break their teeth, it snaps off to a new sharp edge, as sharp as a scalpel.
And did Defa say anything at the time, Brian?
Oh, nothing. Hey, you certainly can't get... It's like trying to find out who authorised the removal of the TT scoreboards, a 100-year-old iconic piece of Isle of Man tourism was removed. And I won't tell you that it was Rob Collister. But it's been removed and we were promised it was going back. Yeah. I'm still looking.
All right.
Now, as far as that and other things are concerned, there'll be a lot of people out there will say, oh, well, you know, it doesn't matter. We can go modern. We can do this. This is part of our heritage. And you might not think so, but tourism is still a significant contributor to our income. And the horse trams, well, if you want to get rid of things like the horse trams, say goodbye to your cruise ships with all these people coming with wallets full of money who pay road service to cart them round and admission charges to go and see these things. They're bringing money into our economy, and we're desperately in need of that.
Okay.
I went out for a meal with a gentleman at the weekend who has a hotel and a lot of office accommodation on the island. And he's got a terrific amount of empty office space at the moment. We've got some really tough times ahead if somebody doesn't sharpen up.
Are you standing for keys in September, Brian?
Nope.
Oh, okay.
No. I've been looking this morning at a couple of the potential parties. And, you know, come on, boys. Get a grip. Stop kowtowing to the stupid voters. You know, on one of them, the first thing I pick up is allowing people to purchase their local authority properties. Long-term tenants can purchase them. What a success that was when Margaret Thatcher did it. The biggest cash giveaway in the history of mankind. My first wife managed to buy a house in Manchester for £22,000 and then sold it 2 years later for £135,000 and bought herself a bungalow up in Blackpool. You know,
okay.
We've got to be very careful of the moves that we make particularly at the moment. How often have you heard people whinging that we should never have sold off the steam railway track to Peel and Ramsey? Now, you can't get it back ever. Now, I'm not interested in railways myself, but I left here one day and got stuck. Photographers everywhere. The whole of the Port Jack and Derby Castle area was jammed with railway enthusiasts that had come to the Isle of Man specifically because they'd put a steam engine on the electric railway track. That earned us a lot of money. So, you know, the little things.
Appreciate it, Brian. Good to hear from you. Thanks for calling today. That's a good subject that you raise. And in fact, I'll bring that up a week on Monday. Claire Barber, the DEFA Minister's here with Tim Cowsell. Next Monday, the Chief Minister's on. Alfred Cannon, MHK, is on Monday the 11th. A week today, actually, Nick Kay's in. Nick Kay, Nick the pharmacist, is on. So I'll ask Nick about Wiles disease and anything to do with rodents. But certainly that's something that's popped up because of this virus on the cruise ship. And certainly the presence of rodents everywhere, a cause for concern. Why electric buses and not CNG? Compressed natural gas, says Texter 188. There's no major electrical infrastructure needed for CND, just a tank and a pump. And don't we already have CNG here? So what's the reason for not using CNG? I wonder why nobody set up a petition to extend the horse tram yet. That might be a good show of support. It's a shame that heritage like this is being neglected in such a way. That message is in from Krista in Port Erin. The focus is on extending the horse trams for tourists, but the wider issue is what else government and Douglas City provide for tourists other than a slow plod through traffic fumes on a drab, crumbling promenade. Excuse me? It's our drab, crumbling promenade, but I know what you mean. The cost of finishing the Douglas tramways are a drop in the ocean, less than the consultants' fees on Erie Stane. Text to 556 says, Andy, could the DOI please sort out the airport as a priority? And on the subject of the TT circuit, does the DOI go down Bray Hill onto Quarterbridge at all? It's in a shocking state. That's it. Back tomorrow with an open line on Man in Line. And thanks to Chris on the phones today.
WINT.